What's Georgie's time?
What the fuck? 5 seconds. Crazy.
Fuck! Kiki beat me. Yeah, I know everyone, almost.
Mm.
Okay, wow. That's cool. At least I beat Grafton.
I beat Kenobi. You know, I can maybe spend some time with you on the weekends. We should do a similar game with Replit with an AI. With a simple, BIP39, 12 words, seed. And you show it for a few seconds. And you let people in your podcast try to fill as much words as they remember.
Hello guys, welcome once again. There's another week at BitCorner Podcast. So yeah, last week was really interesting, right? I know. I didn't know how we end up talking about Ordinals, but it was quite fun. I know that there's so much hate on that, or love, depends where you come from on Bitcoin. But it's, on my end, I think it's really interesting to learn all these things. So, but today we're gonna discuss about Bitcoin, probably about a really good project, some economics, and a little bit of context on Europe and Bitcoin, fiat, and some stuff. I hope that you enjoy, because I'm gonna be honest, I have met these guys in the Barcelona Cypher Conference. We hang out a lot and we talk a lot and we learn a lot from each other, but they are silly as me. If you know the show, then you will realize how it goes. So let's start this, and I want to welcome to Cyan and to Theo to BitCorner Podcast. Welcome, guys.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. How was the afterlife, this Barcelona conference, guys? What have you been doing?
Oh, it was nice. We stopped in Andorra on our way back, visiting some Bitcoiner friends there. Mm-hmm. And then we headed to Prague. We had a blast too. So happy to get some rest after all these conferences.
Yeah, Barcelona was pretty intense, and we were really surprised to meet such a whole crowd of quality people. I mean, I wasn't aware there was such a based community in Barcelona. It was really nice meeting you all. It was really nice having dinners with you too.
Absolutely, man. Actually, we got some really good feedback, so I'm glad that you loved it. It was the first time I went with no expectation at all, but I really enjoyed it. And I think it was a success, because besides that, we had fun going to dinner and everything. We actually made some networking. I think people learn some things in this fix. So yeah. So I don't know. I always like to start a podcast with the guest that they can share some of their little dirty little secrets of their background before their Bitcoin rabbit hole journey. So I don't know, Theo, if you want to start and share us a little bit about yourself, and then we will go with science.
Yeah, with pleasure. So initially I went to business school. I was then trained as a data scientist. And basically I got into Bitcoin traveling in Japan. I lost my wallet, physical wallet with like fake money in it. And so I had to find a way to get some cash, some credit card, something to pay for my trip. And it's quite complicated, even if you have like good banking, when you are abroad, to like manage to get a new credit card, to get like a lot of cash, because Japan is a really expensive country. So you would need like some important amount to do a 3-week trip, as I did. And so I struggled like phoning the credit card company, the bank, and they offered only like substandard, expensive, slow solution. And so at some point I already had like some Bitcoin, but to me it was just an investment. You know, I used to like hold it on an exchange, never used a wallet. Like it was just like some stonks, you know? And then I figured like, okay, I'm in Tokyo. It's a developed country, tech capital on this side of the planet, there must be a way for me to do a peer-to-peer exchange. Although I didn't know this semantics at the time. And so I just Googled like Bitcoin ATM in Tokyo, find one in about like 50 minutes walk from my apartment. Went there, met the guy that installed the ATM because it was out of service. And he just told me like, yeah, I can exchange like up to like crazy amount. I don't remember, it was like 50K or 100K US dollars. Wow. And so I went back the next day, like withdrew coin from the exchange, put that on a software wallet, had a drink with a guy in the bar, just send him like something like 5,000 worth USD of Bitcoin. We waited for one confirmation, just nice chat. And then he handed me the cash and I was like, okay, So I had like a really practical problem that absolutely no financial institution in the world is able to solve. Mm-hmm. This thing is really interesting. I want to know more. That's basically how it started.
That's awesome, man. What about you, Science? Do you also lose your wallet?
You're muted.
You're muted, man.
My God. Sorry about that. My story with Bitcoin actually starts like most people will tell you about their first encounter with Bitcoin, and you know it's the second drink and they start lying, but actually that's the real story. My first encounter with Bitcoin was, I don't know if you have how was it called? Open Bazaar. Do you know Open Bazaar? It was a self-hosted.
Because you're using your glasses, by the way.
It's a self-hosted shop that you have to self-host on a Raspberry Pi, basically. And I think it was 2014 or 2015. But I was selling palm trees, small palm trees, germinated palm trees on this Open Bazaar shop. And it was using Bitcoin as a currency, right, by default. Back in the days, by the way, I felt more the medium of exchange vibe, because you could go in the hood and exchange the Bitcoin for cash very easily. Then later, institutionalization made it impossible. You had to go in physical desks with the ID and stuff. But back in the days, at this time, I was just exchanging Bitcoin for cash like that, and it was really nice. I had no idea what Bitcoin was. It was just a medium of exchange on the internet. I didn't know what is a major. What was
what year do you
exchange?
Say that it was?
What?
What year do you say that it was that? The year that you were doing all this in. Just for context.
Sorry, man. I didn't get you.
The year. The year
oh,
that you were...
I think it was 2014 or 2015. Probably 2015. Okay. And basically, I had no idea what was store of value, medium of exchange, whatever. I was just doing that. And I can tell you, I wiped down computers with wallet.dat. On the desktop, I had no idea what I was doing. And then I never heard, after I stopped doing this activity, I never heard of Bitcoin again. I mined Ethereum with GPUs at the very beginning. And uh-huh. I probably swapped some Ethereum for Bitcoin because I already used it before. But anyways, I didn't believe in any of this shit, and I was selling everything. And because of that, and because I was full of anger because of the price pumps after, I decided I don't want to hear anything about crypto anymore, ever. And I actually came back to Bitcoin by another way, totally different, during the mm-hmm. COVID crisis.
Okay.
I was searching like Neo for an escape of the Matrix. What the fuck is happening? And I was watching a lot of content, and it appeared to me that Bitcoin might be one of the pieces to be free and to start taking back control on my life. So I got back on Bitcoin very late and very heavily, because when I understood it really what it was, what was the purpose of Bitcoin and what it could give me mm-hmm. in terms of freedom, then it was all in, like directly.
But do you have like something specific that hit on you, like actually, because you said that it gave you liberty and but
yes.
How about what was it? Because normally we had like, I have seen that normally people have like a process, or they actually have like something that is, I mean, because of this, what was a process for you?
I was working internationally, and during the COVID crisis, I was forced to stay at home. I think it was before that I saw the truckers crisis in Canada.
Oh yeah.
I was afraid of what the government can do to my money, to my activity, because I lost a lot of money on my fiat activity back in the days because of the lockdown, etc. And I was really like, that's the right image, searching for a way to escape, like Neo, you know. And yeah, it appeared to me that Bitcoin was a part of the solution, and geographical arbitrage too. This is why, as soon as I had the opportunity, I flew away from the country I was locked down to go in the Caribbean, where it was more freedom friendly. Like,
you were in the you went to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And do you have lockdowns or not at all?
Oh yeah. Oh, when I flew I flew to the Caribbeans, and the country where I landed, there was a lockdown, but no one respected it, so it was just perfect.
What about you, Theo? What happened to you? Because I was here in Barcelona, and Barcelona was crazy. I mean, you can literally do anything, just stay at home.
So when this shit hits, I was in Paris. Fortunately, I had some like network connection that told me beforehand that this was happening. So I was able to escape during the first lockdown.
Yeah, cool.
So I just went to the countryside with my girlfriend at the time and a couple of friends, like in a big house that was chill.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it totally like red pill me. And I was already like minarchist, Austrian economist, Bitcoiner, but not the full way, you know? And that totally shifted me to like full, let's defend the state, let's make Bitcoin like our escapes from the matrix, as science said. And then at some point I was frustrated with, of course, the vaccine mandates, the lies and stuff like that. So I decided to immigrate in Switzerland, which at the time didn't have that many restrictions. But it's also, even for a French guy, it's also complicated to immigrate there because, you know, it's not a stupid country that lets anyone go in. You have to apply. You have to be decent. You have to not have criminal records. You have to show that you can sustain your way of life and stuff like that. So it took some time. By the time I was settled in Lausanne, in the French part of Switzerland, the Swiss, because they are, you know, they are bored all the time because nothing happened in Switzerland. They don't value peace. And so they saw like the Italians, the Germans, the French doing like crazy batshit nonsense, jailing their own population. And they decided, you know, like it's a bit quiet here. We will do the same, which was totally crazy because at the time they had like less cases, less deaths, and basically you could go to a restaurant, you could go to clubs, like it was quite free. And so because they decided to implement basically the same measures than in France, I came back to France. And yeah, that's what I did. And I at the time I was teaching economics and finance and also Bitcoin, but it was like the course was called blockchain technology, but you can figure what I told to my students.
Yeah.
And so they asked me because of the lockdown to do that remotely, which I really didn't like because what I really enjoyed in teaching was just like human contact. Like, you know, I'm a Latin guy, like speak with the hands. I need to see in your eyes that you are getting or not getting. But if it's just like talking to someone on the screen, at some point I just told my students, I can just record video on YouTube and you can like watch that for free. So I don't understand why you should pay like 10 grand a year to just like log on your phone, smoke a joint, shut off your camera and pretend you listen at what I'm saying. This is kind of stupid for both you and me. So I stopped that. And just after the lockdown, that's when I decided to work full time in Bitcoin, basically.
That's interesting. Hold on, because you study economics, basically in economics and also in engineering, because I studied, how do you say this in English? Management. I will struggle with this. It's industrial and management and logistic engineering. When we talk about Bitcoin in university, we talk about blockchain as well. But you know, like a way to know how to manage the information and the data in a very structured way, right? So it's different, but no, in the sense of what Bitcoin actually is. So for me, it was very boring. It was actually until years later that I started listening to, you know, to Max Keiser, and then my family also knew somehow about Bitcoin. That's how I get deeper into that, because I was like, all right, there's something in it. But my question is, in economics, my question actually is, what do you learn on that? Because normally what they teach you in university, I think it's like Keynesian economics, right? Not at all the Austrian economics.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to never learn economics in school. So I have more an engineer scientific background. And so I didn't have any economic course before like masters, you know. And then it was more like geoeconomics, like understanding like oil dynamics and like currency wars and stuff like that. So it's a bit more practical. It's a bit bullshit also, but it's a bit more practical. It's more when I discovered Bitcoin that I felt my lack of knowledge in terms of like finance and economics, and I decided to learn it by myself. So I read a bunch of books, and at first I was advised to read like Keynesian stuff, but it didn't make sense to me. And so I decided to pick another book and another book. And at some point I went from Keynes to Friedman, to Hayek, to Hopper, to Amos. And so it was really helpful, first because I was not polluted with what my friends, for example, were taught when they were like 16, 17, 18, stuff like that. So it was easier for me to think about these subjects from first principle. And also I had the chance to be able to compare the different theory and their methodological grounds. And so it was not that difficult to understand that, yeah, like these Austrian guys makes way more sense than or even the classical economics, you know, like Bastiat, Jean-Baptiste Say, or like Adam Smith. Whereas I feel that if you spend like 2-3 years learning economics at school, it's really difficult to unlearn the bullshit that you have learned.
Absolutely.
For me, it was a blank page. And when I entered in Bitcoin, like the period we discussed before, like the first lockdown, basically I met a lot of awesome Bitcoiners online. Yorick de Montbin, he's a prominent Bitcoiner in France. He's basically a high civil servant auditing the state, but really based Austrian economist, really well versed into political science, economy, libertarianism, and also like Alan Farrington from Scotland. I joined like Save Dean University when it opens and stuff like that. And so just during the lockdowns, like, you had a lot of time, you know? So I could like just like read books and books and books and books and discuss them with these guys who already were like deeper into the rabbit hole than me. And so I was like reading some stuff about like, I don't know, like property rights or like some market mechanisms or like theory of money. And then I had the opportunity to just like discuss these topics and figure out what I didn't understand and debate with these guys online, which is like the best like economic teaching that you can hope to have.
Absolutely. And when do you start to work actually 100% in Bitcoin? What about you, Science? When do you start?
I told you the day I came back to Bitcoin by the, let's say, political way or as a tool of freedom, I went like 100%. All of my fiat, all of my money went into that. And since then, all of my money go into that. I think COVID, I don't know if we should say COVID actually for your podcast. But I think this period radicalized a lot of people, not only me. And I was wondering, by the way, did it radicalize you, Juan?
In which sense?
Like doubling down on Bitcoin and wanting to
During my COVID, my COVID story was that I was also in lockdown and I was living in another apartment. So it was big apartment. So it was quite well because we had, with our flatmates, we had our own space. So basically that time I was really bored because it also happened that I finished my studies in the university. So it was the time actually that I was searching for a job and didn't find a job. So, well, actually, yeah, because I started working on Medium, making articles about Apple and whatever, and that's somehow I made money. And Medium actually was quite well during the COVID. Anyways, because I had a lot of time, I was like, first thing that actually drove me as well into Bitcoin is that because I had a lot of time, I was thinking, if I don't do nothing, I'll get fat because all the thing that I will do is to eat. So I started working out and whatever. I was really in shape that back then. But I also was watching, I think the name of the show is Orange Pill, or I don't remember, but it was an RT podcast from Max and Stacy back then. When the war in the between Russia and Ukraine started, Max and Stacy left RT and went to El Salvador and they started their own show and start working. So back then as well, I was talking with my parents and also my sister, and they both know about Bitcoin. But the interesting part is that my dad is a pediatrician, he's a doctor. He's not into economics at all, you know, and he knew about Bitcoin. And my sister, he works actually in economics, so somehow I get it. But I was really interested how my dad knew about that. So we start talking because we had nothing to do. And because of that, I also find out that my dad was also watching Max and Stacy podcast, which it was great. So I was like, maybe there's something here that I didn't learn in the university. So I'll start reading stuff. So I watched like Bitcoin books. And I think back then, Cyphering launched the first book, probably. I don't remember. Oh, a few years ago. So I started reading that. And when I learned about everything, what actually money is, I was like, all right, so I have been lied. And that hit me so hard because I'm the type of person that thinks that, all right, if I have been wrong about this, what else I have been wrong about? So I start digging more and more and more. And then I went literally into Bitcoin. And then I swipe into Medium. And the other thing is that back then I was also talking with my friends about Bitcoin, but they are not into Bitcoin. Nowadays, maybe they are more because of me, but they weren't about Bitcoin. So there was a time that they told me, like, you talk about much about Bitcoin, you should do a podcast. And then El Salvador started doing the Bitcoin legal tender thing, and Bukele and Santi was something there. I was like, how can I contribute from here? Because I was in lockdown in Europe. So how can I couldn't even go back to El Salvador back then. Mm. So yeah, so I was like, how can I help and do something here? And then I thought, all right, maybe I should do the podcast, because there were none Bitcoin Salvadorian podcasts in El Salvador. There was a lot of cool Bitcoin podcasts, but none of them were Salvadorian. So I was like, all right, there's a space here, I should start. And then I started, and then I went full into Bitcoin, and I have learned a lot probably doing this thing. So yeah, that's how my rabbit hole went through.
Well, you cannot do better than that. Yeah, when you're contributing to Bitcoin, this is how you learn the most. I mean, I don't know, maybe I can talk about my experience starting contributing as well.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
I'm ashamed, right? But even after this COVID era, I told myself, okay, I need to work in that space somehow, I don't know. But I contributed first because, you know, money is raining with the shitcoin projects and stuff. It was really easier to contribute into shitcoin companies or whatever. And yeah. I understood, like, straight it was bullshit. And most of the time there were scammers and stuff. Until I found a company in the Silicon Valley working on some kind of tokenized financial products and stuff. Uh-huh. I was saying, okay, this seems legit. It was not. I was bored. And this was the time I discovered local Bitcoin meetups. And I went in Marseille uh-huh. Bitcoin meetup. And it was Fanis Michalakis. Hi, Fanis. Fanis Michalakis. I did two meetups with him. And I say, fuck it. I came back home. I told my wife, I quit my job. I had a really nice job with this American company. And I say, I quit everything. I'm going to work in Bitcoin. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do only Bitcoin. And yeah, I think I started originally translating stuff, video editing. Yeah, video edition. And then I started consulting also in the marketing and sales, because I think that's something that the space lacks. Like, people in the Bitcoin ecosystem, they are really, really into tech, dev, and sometimes they are disconnected from the market and their target. Maybe sometimes they need to code less and listen to the market more.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then I want to move forward a little bit, because then, by the way, guys, I have a game in the podcast that we're going to do in a few minutes, but I'll let you know about that. So yeah, moving forward a little bit, you both work in Bull Bitcoin? I know about you, but what about you, Sainz? Or you're just a contributor, or do you just love the project?
Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoin, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros. Almacenar tus Bitcoin en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al Internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para Bitcoins y Liquid que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCorner Podcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera fría.
Well, I always was a friend of the Bull Bitcoin team, and Thio, as we launched in France first and the whole Europe, obviously, Bull Bitcoin is now available for the whole Europe, and volumes start increasing. And I think, but Theo could talk about this better than me. But I think, yeah, maybe he needed a little bit more time, and he asked me to join the team so I could help on various tasks, but mainly onboarding new users and business development.
So, Theo, the big question, what is Bull Bitcoin?
So yeah, basically Bull Bitcoin is the longest running Bitcoins only exchange. It's totally
This is not sponsored, guys. Sorry. I need to do the parenthesis.
We don't sponsor anything anyway, so
Yeah.
you don't need to disclose. People know.
All right.
And so yeah, it was founded in 2013 in Montreal, Canada, by Francis Pouliot, an OG Bitcoiner, basically. And it was always self-custodial. It stems from a really cypherpunk background, not compromising with Bitcoin core values, especially privacy, self-custody, and stuff like that. He is well-versed into the same things as I am, like economics, political science. So for him, it was always a political revolution. And so basically he discovered Bitcoin and he wanted like to create tools for people to be able to use that more easily. At
All right.
first, Bitcoin was just a cash exchange. So it was a physical location in Montreal. You get in, you exchange some cash for Bitcoin. You had Francis at the entrance helping you set up a paper wallet, understanding what is a public key, a private key, an address. How do you do a transaction and stuff like that. And then with the 2016-2017 bull market, it was a victim of its success, basically. And so there were like really large volumes with cash. And you can picture the thing like 20, 30 something years old in a physical office, like doing crazy volumes in cash. That's pretty dangerous. And so at this point, he decided to close the physical location and to bring the business online by just creating a platform that does exactly the same thing, which is our flagship product today. So basically it's just a like when you go to the airport, you have like this currency desk where they say, okay, I'm in Japan, I want to exchange yen for euro. I will buy yen at I will buy euro at this price, sell yen at this price. We do exactly the same thing. You hand the cash over the counter. Of course, with us, it's bank wires. We send you the Bitcoin on your delivery method of choice, be it Lightning, Liquid, or on chain. So we never keep funds on behalf of clients. And we only deal in Bitcoin. Mainly, I would say Bull Bitcoin is a technology company. The way we make money is the spread between the price at which we buy Bitcoin and the price at which we sell Bitcoin. There is no fees, no hidden commission. We even pay for on-chain transaction when we deliver the Bitcoin to you. However, we also develop a lot of open source tools and we contribute to a lot of projects that doesn't bring money directly. So for example, we have a Bitcoin open source self-custodial wallet that is structured in a way that is becoming more popular this day. So basically use Bolt's atomic swap to swap liquidity from Liquid, Lightning and on-chain to allow you to have a self-custodial Lightning experience without having to manage liquidity and lock Bitcoin into Lightning channels without having to run a Bitcoin Lite node on your phone, which is kind of difficult. And it has a lot of advanced features, like you can run it through Tor, you can connect it to a distant Electrum server, you can do coin labeling, you can do coin selection. We also announced a new feature in Prague through Francis' keynotes that is called Recoverable. It's basically a new technology to help onboard people. It's a backup technology. So it's not meant to replace hardware wallets, but it allows you to really download a self-custodial software auth wallet on your phone and to have a backup with really strong encryption directly on a drive or on a local file. So that way, if you met like some newbie, I don't know, in a restaurant or stuff like that, they won't have the attention span to learn about like what is BIP39, what are mnemonics, what is a private key, what is a public key. you can just basically make them download the wallet, do a backup through their Google Drive, for example, and it will be encrypted through a PIN, but it's not directly encrypted through the PIN. So it's kind of difficult. It's long to explain, so I won't delve into that. But basically, yeah, it's really strong encryption. But from the user side, if you remember the PIN, you will always have access to the fund, and it's impossible to brute force. And Bitcoin is not a single point of failure in the mechanism. So it's quite robust in terms of security, and it's also really easy to use even if you are not a Bitcoiner. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of the software that we try to build. It won't necessarily bring us money directly, but Francis' vision for Bitcoin is like, it's freedom money, it's fuck you money, it's internet magic money. So we need people to spend it, we need people to hold it, we need people to be able to easily swap between different layers, different network, different, even from fiat to Bitcoin, because that's the world we live in. And so basically what we try to do is make the experience as beautiful, as easy, and as pleasant as possible, so that people will start understanding the importance of self-custody, the importance of mixing, of privacy, or stuff like that. And the only way we can do that is creating tools that are on par with custodial tools in terms of user experience, but that don't compromise these kind of values.
All right. And you mentioned that you use atomic swap, so that it means that you're non-custodial, right? Because when you do atomic swap,
It's a totally self-custodial wallet. So the way it works...
By the way, sorry that I interrupt.
Yes.
No problem. Yeah, we work with Bolt. They are really good friends of us. Hmm. We contributed to the swap library.
Uh-huh.
And I think we are one of their main users. You also have other wallets, of course, using Bolt's atomic swaps, and you can also access the swaps directly, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just like really good technology, I think. Like, you know, when Lightning started to be a thing, basically during COVID, it was like the promised land, you know? It was oversold. And if you had the same experience as me of trying to run a node, manage your own channel, access your node remotely and stuff like that, you would understand that for a non-technical person, it's really difficult. It's time consuming. And also, it doesn't scale really well, because at the end of the day, Lightning is really complicated technology. Payments can fail for many reasons. And so if you want reliability, you will prefer go through fat, well-managed node with like big channels, a lot of engineers that can debug stuff like async, like our nodes and stuff like that. And so basically Francis' vision, which I share, is that Lightning is awesome, but Lightning is a settlement technology. It's not a payment technology. Yeah. Lightning is basically the bridge that we will use to send money between all the tech providers, different layers, even like DeFi applications that we will then build on Bitcoin when we will have the composability to do that. But it's not like a pleb tool to pay for your coffee. For that, you can just use swaps.
Well, I would like to add something here.
Go ahead.
I'm not a tech guy. I mean, I don't work in dev or whatever, but I'm kind of tech savvy. And yeah, I was managing my own node. I also use Phoenix, which I think is awesome for intermediate to expert users. But then I discovered the Bull Bitcoin wallet myself, and I was skeptical at the beginning. But when you use it, it's so convenient, and you know you don't have to manage a node. You know, if you receive a lot of payments, you will not be charged for enlarging the liquidity channel or splicing in, splicing out, etc. Well, you understand quickly that, wow, if I need to onboard someone at the restaurant or whatever, it's so...
Which we did. Well, do you remember?
Yes.
Not with Bitcoin Bullet, by the way, guys. No, we didn't do Bitcoin Bullet. We did it with Wallet Satoshi. I don't remember. But we onboard someone.
Every time I can do that, I will do it, you know? It makes it so much easier. Yeah. Theo mentioned the bull recover feature, which is a revolutionary way to make a backup quickly without having to explain BIP39 to a newbie, etc. You know, crisis, the guy is already wondering, what the fuck are you talking about? But everything with our product is made so it can be easy for beginners to handle, but we have all the features needed for experts. That's the DNA.
One way you could summarize this is end-to-end, if you think about the user experience, I get into Bitcoin in a self-custodial way. I have to back up. I have to pay, I have to swap, I have to spend, I have to stack sats, I have to DCA, I have all these actions that over like my Bitcoiner life, I will have to do. And so what we want to do is make that as easy, intuitive, and accessible as possible for everyone without compromising on the values that we discussed. So once all these product suites will be finished, let's say, because there are all still parts here and there under development, and we are still fixing bugs here and there, either on the platform, the wallet, shipping new functionalities. Basically, the idea is that on your phone, in under 2 minutes, you would be able to have a wallet, have a backup without understanding all these complex topics in a self-custodial way, to be able to purchase Bitcoin, to pay anyone to any bank account in the world by spending Bitcoin, to receive payments through Lightning, through Liquid, on-chain, to do pay joins, to do swaps, to do stuff like that. So basically, you would have everything in one app, one-stop shop from your phone, and without needing to be a shadowy supercoder, as the cool kids say these days.
I was thinking about, I'm going to play devil here, guys, because probably if someone wants to be on board also needs to make hard questions. So I'm going to make hard question that if I will be on board on here, let's say in Europe, because you say that you're around the world, but let's say in Europe that Europe, as we know, love Bitcoin. No, they hate it. So how do you deal with, what is the name of the regulation?
MiCA.
Exactly. How do you deal with these all things? Because here in Europe, I feel like every single year is going crazier, more into CBDCs and less into Bitcoin. They're going in that, not right direction.
Yeah. So let's say that we have a company policy to adhering to the letter of the law, because that's a requirement for us to continue operations. We cannot just say, okay, this thing doesn't exist, even if we want to sometimes. But there is a difference between the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. So one of Francis' main talents is hacking the legal system.
All right.
I'm not saying that because he's my boss. I would praise him for being one of the best non-licensed lawyer in the world. He's really good for like reading a regulation and being, if we do it that way, then we don't have to give up user data. We don't have to enforce this stupid bullshit. But we can still argue that we are not breaking the law. So let's do that. So that's basically what we try to do. And sometimes you can do that. Like, for example, with MiCA, I will give you a practical example to illustrate that. With MiCA came something called the TFR, the travel rule, which basically states that for any transfer of more than 1,000 euros, the recipient should know information about the sender and stuff like that. So that's quite a pain in the ass when you are a custodial platform, because if, for example, I am on a custodial exchange and I want to withdraw like 2,000 euros worth of sats, and it's not my wallet, then I would need to prove, because of the law, that it's my wallet. So what many of our competitors decided to implement is to force the user to sign a message with his private key to basically kind of demonstrate that he owns the address on which the funds will be sent. And there is a lot of problems with that. First is the fact that you actually cannot know that it's the physical person that has been KYC'd that is signing the message, because it's just a cryptographic signature. So I could be using your laptop, Juan, and signing, it's Juan, send the funds. So basically it achieves nothing. The other thing is that, I don't know if you guys ever did that, but going into like a hardware wallet companion and a software wallet and signing a message is not that easy. And for like intermediate and newbies, intermediate users and novice users, it's really poor user experience. And so the way we do that is, okay, we looked at the regulation and we're like, so all the things, all the crazy stuff like signing the transaction, stuff like that, that our competitors are doing are actually not directly mandated by the law. What they ask is to have two way to know that the funds are actually sent to a wallet that is operated by the person that has been KYC'd on the platform. So the way we do that is two-factor authentication, but because it's a way to prove that you are actually the person that has created an account on Bull Bitcoin. And it's also a really good security measure. So two birds in one stone. And we put a little box that you tick saying when you do a transaction and you put your address to receive the funds, you just tick a box saying, okay, it's my address. And because you are logging with a two-factor authentication, it abides by the law. To my knowledge, we are the only one operating in Francistan or in like European Union at large that are doing such a light, implementing such light measure to abide to MiCA. The problem, the main problem that you will have if we take a step back is that most of these companies are run by compliance departments because they raise money, because they want to IPO at some point, because they have a lot of stake, want to take risk. Your job in this kind of companies is covering your ass. So when the engineering team wants to develop something that will help basically abide to MiCA, it's the compliance guy that will write the specs. At Bulbicain, it doesn't work like that for the simple reason that we never took outside money. We don't have any debt. It's Francis' company, basically. So he can do whatever the fuck he wants. And because he doesn't want to encroach on people's freedom and because he doesn't want to implement silly stuff that doesn't prove anything, as in the example I just gave you, he just tried to act the law. Going back to my example of, we will abide to the letter of the law and not the spirit of the law if we think it breaks cypherpunk's value, which is almost always the case when it comes out from... Last thing on that point, as you mentioned, European bureaucrats have an endless supply of crazy ideas to make you surf. So at some point, if we feel that it's not possible to wiggle our way around these constraints, we'll just change our business model, stop touching fiat, close shop in Europe. It's just like, for the moment, we can do that. We can still operate in a way that is acceptable to us. But yeah, we never know. Like maybe in 4 or 5 years, it won't be the case. And then we will just try to build freedom tools, but in a way that is less, how to say, is less vulnerable to regulations.
All right. Okay. Thank you for sharing the science.
What Theo tries to say here is that we would prefer change business model or change country, change jurisdiction instead of giving one each and not accomplishing our mission. Our mission is to serve the client and the Bitcoiners, not to be the extension of the state, basically. By the way, I mean, Europe is Europe, but we have businesses abroad. We have businesses in Canada, obviously, in Costa Rica, Mexico, and soon we're going to open 3 jurisdictions. So if we have troubles in the future doing our job, simply our job in Europe, we can also expand horizontally in different jurisdictions.
And also,
sorry
to interrupt science quickly. Also, one thing we could do in Europe, you know, like this regulation, when it targets individuals, it's really bad. When it's companies, I mean, like, you can KYC a company. It's a legal entity, you know?
Yeah.
So at some point, we could also decide, like, okay, we don't want to be a big brother's, like, accomplice, but we can still run OTC desk and provide, sell UTXOs to companies, you know? Like, that's okay with us. So there is always a way to find, to adapt your business model to what these kind of, these bureaucrats will come up with.
Oh, yeah, I can add something on top of that. Basically, Bull Bitcoin is, and I'm happy, I'm really happy joining the team because it's Bitcoin made for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners, and it changes everything. Like earlier, Theo was mentioning the compliance departments of other exchanges or whatever. They are not Bitcoiners, basically. They will not take Bitcoiners' considerations when applying the rules, basically, yeah. And yeah, we do all sort of stuff. We also facilitate real estate deals, including Bitcoin transactions. We also help professionals, companies, institutions constitute Bitcoin treasuries. And recently, we even had a partnership with a Canadian bank, allowing all their customers to access real Bitcoin and not ETFs or, I don't know, Suits Coins. Like, Suits Coins is, you know, Bitcoin treasury companies, stocks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what we do.
Yeah. Actually, I have a funny question about that, but I'm going to ask you after the game because I have a funny game. But just before jumping into the game, guys, I just want to clarify because probably some of you asked, so why do you show these services? And my idea is to show everything possible that are in the Bitcoin space. So of course I have to be very transparent. My partner, of course, is Blockstream, but besides that, I always like to show everything that all the options that you have possible. You know that Julian have been from Relay have been here in the podcast. That's why you guys are here, because I think those are kind of the best options that I have seen that probably are the best option for Europeans. The same if you go to other places around the world, for example, El Salvador. Blink, for me, it's one of the best options. So my goal is to show you, besides all the technical parts and all the funny parts, that you just have several options that it exists this and this and this, and then you go and dig into it and do your own research on that, and then you can start using it or not, and you can throw shit on them. But that's on you
And man,
guys.
the competition is always good for the end user.
Exactly. They have more options, and all of us are helping into the Bitcoin adoptions.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, guys, I have two games in the podcast. One, it's funny, and the other one is funnier. One actually I wanted to do with you, but in the conference, but we didn't have the time. So, but now I have the time, and because of my podcast, I'm gonna tell you how to do it. The first one, this is a competition. It's actually a competition by the end of the season that is, I don't know if you have ever asked who is the fastest typing, or how much time do you actually take to type A to Z, the alphabet. It's a very hard competition between Bitcoiners. And right now, the king of that competition is Jordi from Satlantis, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah. So he has one of the best timing, I think. He well, I won't say the timing because it's pretty good, but I want to see how what.
Wait, can you repeat what the rules are for 18 ATIQ pleb?
You need to type the alphabet in the right order.
Yeah, and you have to be fast. And I'm doing this with you guys because I know you spend a lot of time in the computer. So I'm gonna share with you the I'm gonna share with you the link on the here on the chat. And you have three opportunities to do this. And where is it? So yeah, here. So you have you can do it. I can give you several options. The first one is that you can do it by yourself and just share me your best timing, a screenshot of the best timing, because we don't trust BitVerify. Or you can share your screen and people can laugh at you. It's up to you.
Okay.
So, and you have three opportunities, and we keep the best timing. And by the end of the season, we will see who is the best Bitcoiner typing the
You
alphabet. So,
start, Tio. I will
yeah,
let you
I'm
start.
starting now.
All right, you have three opportunities now.
So I did 8.3, 7.6, and 6.9.
Oh, that's good, man. Wow, that's a really good improvement. Normally people go worse.
Oh, really? That's weird
Yeah.
because the more you do it, the easier it's for your brain to know where the keys are.
I'm
Yeah,
sure
but
you would have asked me this outside of the podcast. I would have done better, but the pressure here is
that's the thing, man.
unsustainable.
That's the thing. That's because you have the pressure of the podcast. No, I have done it. I have done this. It's so interesting, you know, guys. This is a social experiment because it's so interesting when you have the camera and when you hit recording, our personalities, everything changed. You have a pressure here, even you know that you have post-production and you can edit some shit and stuff. But once you're in camera, it's another world. When you do it outside, people are so slow and yeah. But
Well,
yeah.
I'm
The
sure.
problem is, Juan, you met us in Barcelona. The problem is that if science is on camera as it is in real life, we'll go to jail. So it has to
That's
be this way.
true. That's true. We cannot say what you do in privately.
What happens in Barcelona stays in Barcelona.
Absolutely, yeah. Agreed.
I'm sure alone in the dark with the music loud, I can do better. Anyway, that's really funny game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really stupid, let's be honest, but it's really catchy. People love it. Now people are really into that. So yeah.
I'm curious, what's Jordi's time?
My time?
No, Jordi.
Jordi's. Look, that is Jordi. These are the best timing. Drew,
what the 5 seconds. Crazy.
Yeah, so hold on. Drew,
he beat me.
He's from Blockstream. He's the one that works in the marketing from Blockstream. Kenobi.
I know everyone almost.
All right. So, yeah. So the best timing, it's Adam. By the way, this is not Adam back, just to let you know. But Jordi from South Atlantic has the best timing. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's cool. At least I beat Grafton.
I beat Kenobi.
All right, man. Yeah, you see, you're not the worst one. Yeah, Kenobi, he was struggling on that.
You know, I can maybe spend some time with you on the weekends. We should do a similar game with Replit with an AI, with a simple, BIP39, 12 words, seed, and you show it for a few seconds, and you let people in your podcast try to fill as much words as they remember.
Guys, so what I was explaining before this madness is that so the podcast, each episode has their own story, but the way that the podcast, it has some continuity is that we make some connection within blocks or timestamps or whatever you want to call it, or a snowball effect. So the way that it works is that my previous guest have a question for my next guest. So my previous guest have a question for you. And you will have the opportunity to make a question by the end of the episode when we finish recording to my next guest, which I'm going to record tomorrow. So, but this is the question from my last guest, which was Erin, that I think I told you before we started recording, that she is the host of Hell Money. She works in Ordinals. And prepare for the question because it can be really interesting. I would like to know both answers.
My question is, which is worse, ordinals or Bitcoin astrology? And why? And why? You have to also answer and why.
Yeah, no problem. So definitely ordinals, for the simple reason that Bitcoin astrology doesn't blood the chain with nonsensical transaction. Both are fictional things that doesn't exist really. At the protocol level, but one is polluting, the other is just moronic.
All right. What about you, Science?
Okay, I will have the same take as Theo. I think I don't care about ordinals, and I think it's valueless. I mean, if you need to write on the blockchain special events or things for your family to remember, you can do an up return. I don't understand ordinals, to be honest, but Bitcoin astrology, if we are talking about trading Bitcoin with astrological signs or whatever, I think that's interesting. I think that's not worse than doing a technical analysis. Eh?
That's why? The same. Why? Because both don't have any background, science background.
trying to guess the entropy of the market. And yeah, if you prefer to use astrology instead of technical analysis, good for you, man. I think both are the same.
All right. Fair. That's a good answer. Do you want to add something? Science?
I precise that I'm not a trader. Maybe some people will say, okay, it's full of bullshit now because I have actual tools and stuff. But to me, it's the same. I could use astrology and technical analysis, drawing lines and stuff. It would be the same result.
All right. Interesting. Good to know. Yeah. All right, guys. So we're going to start wrap it up because I know that you had to leave. But yeah. We have done almost an hour. More than an hour, actually. Time flies. I think we need to do another because I also want to ask you about your thoughts here in Europe and France and all other stuff. But that's for another day. So I don't know, anything that you want to ask before I wrap this thing up and let us go? If you want to say something that probably I should have asked or not, is the time. Otherwise, we can start closing. From Theo Science.
Go ahead.
Well, own your money and stay sovereign.
That's a good closure.
Yeah.
What exactly. About you, Theo?
Oh, thanks for having us. It was really funny. And yeah, we are UTXO dealers. So learn self-custody, spend Bitcoin. That's the way forward.
And I can't wait to eat again the Rubia Galega with you, Juan.
Yeah. So anyways, guys, thank you very much for spending time with me, with us. We'll catch up. Hopefully, you know that Barcelona is always your home, so you can come. And yeah, guys, see you next week. I hope that you enjoy it. So,
see ya.
Ciao.
See you.
Ciao.